Good morning.
Good morning.
All righty. So we're going to be continuing our review of Paul's second missionary journey. So hopefully you did your homework. And reference to Mr. Bree's opening, I liked his two hands. That should work great on coffee. Yeah. And I had I will admit, a smart aleck response to the question this morning that I will not share. But anyway. Okay. Never mind. All right. So we're going to be covering, for those of you that may be visiting, hi, Ice and Knuckles. I don't see anybody else that I don't recognize. Well, we've been working through Paul's missionary journeys, really the life of Paul. And so last week we kind of jumped into a little bit of the review of Paul's second missionary journey. We're going to wrap the review up. That's pretty much what we're going to do today. Just cover the rest of the review from the second missionary journey. And then next week, yes, no, maybe, we have Benoy. Still don't know? What's that? Looking like it? Okay. I will take that as gospel, Mr. Simpson. Thank you. So, if not, then we'll just pick it up with, obviously, Paul's third missionary journey. But if Mr. Thomas is here, he'll do the class next week. And then the weekend after that, again, I'll be gone for Badlands Family Camp. We'll be watching a movie. I have not determined which one that will be yet, but we'll come up with something there. So, all right. So I guess before I get into this, one of the things I want to ask you too is to consider is I want you to kind of think about what we've covered in the second missionary journey, and what are some of the things that have really stood out to you? Maybe some things that you didn't know before, or some things that you hadn't really considered, or some things that really made a point with you, or really stood out to you. And I'll ask you for that kind of at the end. So last week we talked a little bit about some of the basic stuff from the first or from the second missionary journey. I'll ask the question again: in which chapter does the second missionary journey begin? Kendall? Yep, Acts 15. So, easy way to remember that, because the reason I'm bringing this up is so that if you know it's in the second missionary journey, you want to go and reference it, it's easy to find it. Just remember that letter from Acts chapter 15 is kind of the segue into the second missionary journey. It's in the same chapter there. So, in the second missionary journey, after they had, after Timothy had been circumcised, we talked a little bit about that at the end of the week or at the end of the class last week. Next question I have is: into which two areas were Paul and his companions not allowed to go? Remember that? Remember, he was leaving with Timothy. He wanted to go into a couple of different areas. Which areas was he not allowed to go into? Roger, go ahead and give me one.
Asia.
Okay. Another one? And what city? Here's another question. What city, what famous city is in Asia? At least in terms of the New Testament aspect. Major city in Asia. It's really important. What's that?
Back then.
I mean, probably one of the primary ones where Paul writes a letter to him. Starts with an E, ends with an Ephesus. Ephesus, it's okay. Ephesus is a major important city in Asia. So Paul is originally trying to go into that area. And as we talked about, it was probably one of the reasons he was wanting to go into Asia, because he wanted to go to Ephesus, because it was a very important city in the time. Another area that he was not able to go into. We also talked a little bit about this, one of the cities that would have been, if he had been able to go into this particular area, a major city that I think he was trying to get to, but was not able to. Will?
Bithynia.
Anybody remember the city that we talked about? Really important city. It's on the port of the Black Sea. It's on the Dardanelles. It's right at the north Western end of Bithynia. Starts with an I, ends with bull, has a stan in the middle. Istanbul, Constantinople. And so if you think about one of the reasons why Paul was probably trying to go into Bithynia initially was to get into that very important trade city. But the Lord prevented him from going into either one of those areas. And so instead, where does he end up going? I'm calling you to this place. Macedonia, right? So anybody know what city the Macedonian call occurred in? What's that? Troas. Yep, very good. What other notable event occurred in the city of Troas? This one's a little bit of a nuanced one, but it's one we did talk about. So Paul's in the city of Troas. He's gotten the Macedonian call. And if you're not really, if you're not careful to read the words that are described there, used there in Scripture, something else happens. Kendall. It appears that that is where Luke joins the troop. Okay, so Macedonia. Let's chat a little bit about Macedonia for just a moment. Anybody name a couple of rulers that were from Macedon? Philip and Alexander. Philip of Macedon and his son Alexander, who of course became Alexander the Great. So Macedonia was an important area in history for that reason, for King Philip and Alexander the Great and others. Okay, so what Macedonian city that was also a Roman colony do Paul and company in what Macedonian city that was also a Roman colony do Paul and company encounter women who had assembled at the riverside to pray? This one should be really easy. Karen had it. It's Philippi, right? Okay, so if you're following along in your Bibles. anyway, it's in the city of Philippi is where they first encounter these ladies. Who is the first convert in Europe? Somebody over here have it? Yeah, Lydia. What was Lydia known for? Purple stuff. Right? So the New American Standard translates it as purple fabric, but really it's just, she was a seller of purple. So if you wanted something purple, a purple textile, you got it from her. Now, why is this notable? Do you remember this? Do you remember when we talked a little bit about this? Why is it notable that she sells purple fabric, purple stuff? It was a very hard color to get, which this woman, having traveled, she was not from Philippi. Anybody remember where she was from? Okay, never mind. Thank you, Thyatira. So, having traveled to Philippi, probably as a businesswoman, she was apparently pretty successful. To be known for selling purple stuff, she had to have been relatively successful at it. Okay. During the first missionary journey, Paul and his companions, they encounter a young lady with a rather unfortunate affliction. Anybody remember what that was? Yep, so we'll stop you right there. So she was possessed with an evil spirit. Do you remember what the name of that spirit was? New American Standard doesn't say it directly. It was in Rotherham's that actually told you. Kendall? Python. The spirit of Python. Okay? It was a snake deity that was worshipped as a part of Greek paganism. Specifically at Delphi. Okay. So, Paul would eventually cast this demon out of her. I mean, thankfully, of course. Well, what was the reason? Why did Paul cast the demon out? Jonathan? He was greatly annoyed. That's a great way to put that. But why was he annoyed? What was it about what this young lady was saying, or that the demon was saying through her, that was so annoying? Scott? Yep. Very good. Because remember, Python, this demonic spirit, was speaking through this young woman, and this young woman was following them and saying, listen to these guys, they have a way of salvation. Now, again, New American Standard 1995 will say the, but that is incorrect. It's been corrected in the latest version of the New American Standard, and like Rotherham's and some of the other better literal translations will say the same thing. They'll say a way of salvation. This was super not cool. So Paul takes the finally has enough of it, and he casts out the demon from this young woman. Now, with this particular situation, we talked about this as well, but what was unique about this encounter in which Paul cast out this evil spirit? What was unique about this encounter in comparison to what maybe he had done on his first missionary journey? Remember, he had encountered a man who was born lame. You remember what happened then? What did he first do when he saw this man? Uh-huh. Exactly. Because remember, the first time when he was on the first missionary journey, and he sees this man born lame, he immediately heals him coming into the city. And hopefully, you know, obviously the opportunity there is to bring some attention so that they can preach the word. Well, it doesn't work out so well, because then they think he's Zeus and Hermes. I want to say Mercury, because that's the Roman one. Anyway, they mistake him for false gods. So in this case, Paul waits many days until he's finally annoyed or agitated, and then before he finally heals this young lady. Okay, so once this had happened, after Paul had cast out this spirit, let's talk about this question for a second. What was the motivation for this young lady, and specifically her handlers, to follow Paul and his companions? What was the motivation? Any Star Trek fans in here? No? Wow. It's a tough crew. Wow. Ferengis, man. That's why. It's profit. What was it that this woman was bringing to these handlers? Much profit by fortune telling. What was Paul and what were Paul and his companions doing? They were garnering some attention because they were going through the city preaching. So they decided, hey, we're gonna kind of tag along here and maybe catch some of these stragglers and make some money out of this, make some denarii out of this. And so how do we know this? How do we know that profit was their motivation? Anybody know? How do I come up with that profit was their motivation, outside of just that it had been bringing them much profit? Anybody else besides Jonathan and Will? It's a little bit of conjecture, but yes.
The handlers got upset after Paul cast the demon out.
Right.
Because they lost their profit.
Yeah, that's their hope of profit was gone. Obviously, it's from Acts 16:16 through 18. And the other aspect of this is that their complaint before the magistrates, when they finally brought Paul and his companions before the magistrates, the complaint was related to a Roman law against proclaiming unsanctioned religious teaching, but they were not really concerned about that issue, as they didn't bring it to the attention of the government officials until after they lost their profit potential. So they weren't really concerned about what Paul and his companions were saying until it could be used against them. Their reason for bringing them before the magistrates was purely profit-driven. Okay. This one you may not get, but it's cool. I think it's really cool. Okay. What is the specific Greek word Luke uses that is translated as magistrates in our text? This is one of those things that, remember, Luke is very specific in the words that he chose to use, especially when he's referring to offices. It's a tough one. It may not get it. Anybody have any guesses? Eli? Yep. Yep, strategos or strategos. Okay? So, basically, it denoted that these men were both military and civilian authorities, and it highlights Luke's careful use of these proper titles. So, let's see. Let's skip through some of this. I want to get into a couple of the other cities before we run out of time. Okay, so here's an obvious one. What was the immediate result of casting out of the evil spirit from the slave girl? What happened after that? Yeah, skip forward a little bit. Prison, right? But they were brought before the magistrates, right? So, actually, if we back up just a little bit, they were dragged into the marketplace before the authorities, then before the chief magistrates. And then what happens at this, after they were brought to the magistrates? This becomes important later on. So they're brought to the magistrates. They're brought, first of all, to the marketplace. And then they're brought to the chief magistrates. And then what happens right after that before they're in the prison cell? They were stripped and they were beaten. Okay? So they were stripped naked. And then they were beaten in a public forum. And what was unique about this? Well, maybe unique's the wrong word, but why is this a big deal?
They didn't have to trial beforehand.
Right, they weren't tried beforehand. They didn't get the opportunity to plead their case. What's that? Yeah, and Paul was a Roman. So was Silas. It was exactly mob justice, mob rule. The reason that the chief magistrates gave into this is because the mob wanted it. The crowd wanted some vengeance. And for whatever reason, they probably didn't really know who Paul was, or probably, honestly, didn't care what he was saying. They just wanted somebody to be beaten because they liked it. That was very much their society. Yes, Jonathan. Yeah, absolutely. These men bringing this, I mean, obviously, if you have a slave girl with divination and you're making much profit from it, you're probably well known and have some pull. And so, Paul and Silas were probably used as examples. So, yeah, good point. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely some conspiratorial aspects to that, to what they were doing and using Paul basically against, using Paul's words against them. And yeah, so definitely some interesting stuff. Mark?
Somebody that's motivated by profit to follow along with somebody that's, you know, right across.
Right. Yep. Yep. So the Mark's point about the marketplace being kind of a carnival, it would have been, they, especially Paul and Silas, they would have been bringing something new. They would have been, you know, working, as Mark said, overtime to try to get people's attention. It would make sense that these businessmen would take opportunity to, you know, garner some of that attention, to profit from it. Okay. Let's see. All kinds of things that we can talk about here. These are tough. If you can get these, I'd be kind of surprised. But in what other letters does Paul mention directly or refer to the trial or lack thereof in Philippi? There's a couple of other letters. Actually, there's three that he directly mentions this, these events. So one of them should be pretty obvious, Philippians, right? Okay. A couple of other ones, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and the other one is 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He alludes to it in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, but in 1 Thessalonians and Philippians, he directly mentions the fact that they had been based on these events that had occurred before the magistrates. Okay, so Paul and Silas were thrown into prison. Three primary points from the conditions that they experienced in the prison. Can somebody give me one? Remember the conditions under which they suffered in the prison. Brad?
It was filthy,
that's one. Okay, that's not necessarily what I was worried about. Jonathan? Yeah, they were put in, their feet were put in the stocks. Now, again, the literal is they were put to the wood, and that could mean several different things, but historically speaking, we know that it was a horribly uncomfortable situation to be put in. And the other one is that it's very specific about placement in the prison. They were in the inner prison. They were in the most secure area of the prison. Okay? What were Paul and Silas doing while they were in prison? They were praying. They were singing while praying, is the technical Greek approach or translation. Okay, so I'm going to skip through some of this because I want to get on, because we haven't even left Philippi yet. So just a couple of quick points here. they were freed from the prison via an earthquake, and the jailer was about to do what when he saw that all the prisoners were freed? He was going to kill himself, right? Yes, he was going to fall on his own sword. And that was a very much accepted approach in that particular situation. Why? Why was the jailer going to kill himself? Yeah? Specifically, why? Yeah, the prisoners had escaped, but specifically, why was he going to kill himself? Jonathan? Yeah, he was charged specifically with their responsibility. Right, because you guys are both correct. The other aspect to this is that if you were a Roman jailer and you let a prisoner escape, whatever that prisoner was going to receive, you were going to get it. And in the case of this jailer, where this particular prison was, most likely all of the prisoners in that prison were on a death sentence, which means that it probably would have gone to him and then to his family. And so he was going to take it and just save his family from it. Anybody give me an example of from Acts that illustrates this point? It's not in Acts chapter 16 or 17 or 18 or 19 or 20. Or on and on and on. It's a little bit earlier. It deals with Peter. Acts chapter 12, verses 18 and 19, it's wherein the jailers were charged with guarding Peter. Let's go back there real quickly. I just want to make this point. Acts chapter 12, verses 18 and 19. Now when the day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards, which is examining, by the way, is not necessarily, hey, what happened here? That's a whole other story. They ordered that they would be led away to execution. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and was spending time there. They were responsible for the prisoners, and whatever punishment was to be meted out on them, the jailers would get if they escaped. Okay. Philippian jailer. Let's talk a little bit about this. So we know that Paul calls out, tells the jailer, don't kill yourself, we're all here. What was the jailer's first response at this? Yeah, he came in, fell on his feet, man. What do I do? What's next? How do I get out of this? What do I need to do to be saved? Now, we talked quite a bit about this, but the Philippian jailer, he would not have known all of the things that Paul was preaching about. He may have heard about them. He may have even heard about the events that caused Paul to be in prison. But he was certainly asking for some sort of salvation from this. Okay? And we've talked quite a bit about that. So I won't necessarily go into that in more detail. But how did the jailer show his appreciation for Paul saving his life? Yeah, brought him into the house, cleaned up his rooms and wounds, and fed him. Okay, fed them. Pretty straightforward stuff. So we know that the jailer and his household believed and were immersed. How do we know that any children, if present, weren't immersed as well? This might be a little bit longer discussion than we can have in the review. This is a question you absolutely need to know how to answer. Absolutely. That's why we spent almost an entire day or an entire class session on just this subject. This is one that you need to know how to answer. If you don't know how to answer it now, figure it out. Come and ask. Ask any number of us who can answer those questions for you. But you have to know how to answer that question. You have to, because it will come up. Okay? All right. Wow. Okay. Now, this is a little bit of a nuanced thing, but I find it interesting. What was unique about this Bible study with the Philippian jailer, aside from obviously the earthquake and everything else? But what was unique about this? It's a little bit of a nuance, but I think it illustrates Paul and Silas's character very well. What was the first thing they did? They came in, they had a nice rest and took some food and changed their clothes and talked about the weather. First thing they did was they preached the gospel to this guy. They spoke the word to him. And then it was after all of this that they began to worry about themselves. We are not going to restart the computer at this point. Okay. Whew. That would be fun. All right. So, lots of things we can talk about there. Any specific instances out of this episode in Philippi that jump out at you? Don't have to. Just wanted to see if there's anything that you maybe hadn't considered before. Will? Yeah. Mob mentality without trial. That's not, unfortunately, that's nothing new, but yes. Jonathan? Yep.
Yet they didn't. They allowed it, and it wasn't until, I believe later on, it was that Paul got irritated that they were trying to secretly put them away.
Yep.
They knew that they messed up, not knowing that they were citizens, but they knew they messed up.
Yep.
And it was at that point that Peter, or Paul, went, hey, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think your comment and Will's goes together very well. They didn't have the opportunity to really share their Roman citizenship with them. They weren't given an opportunity for a trial. And yeah, they were beaten and imprisoned, and they, you notice that they didn't blame the jailer for it. They're like, we're here, it's your fault. No, they didn't blame the jailer for it. It wasn't until they had the opportunity to speak to the magistrates.
And that goes hand in hand too as well, just because of things
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep, that's a good point. That's an excellent point, JD, and I think it's one that's worth exploring. But the reality is that just because we don't like what's going on in our current world affairs, it doesn't mean that the lady sitting behind the DMV counter is responsible for it. And if we show love to her and show the love of Christ, we're going to have a better opportunity to save her than we would if we were like, I'm a free citizen of the United States and I shouldn't have to. You know what? It's not their job. It's not their. Yeah. It's not their authority. Yes, Peach.
He chose that person for security, but what about the other part of the prison? I mean, they were put to the wooden stocks. Did they necessarily need to be put to stocks? But obviously, there was something going on there in his thinking. I mean, were they still able to walk? I mean, did these other prisoners in the inmost inner part of the jail get out at times? You know,
yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, the point being that the jailer decided to put them in the stocks for his probably his own protection because he didn't want to die. Scott.
By not telling him that he was a Roman citizen and by being put into jail, that also puts those people in the wrong right then. Rather than if they had immediately come up and said, we're Roman citizens, they would have never been jailed. And they're trying to build a church there and they could go through and stomp those people out.
Yep. That
they can't mess with the church they're trying to bring.
Exactly. And that's the kind of the final point I wanted to bring out. Thank you, Scott. That, you know, the fact that Paul and Silas had been put in prison basically gave them an opportunity to bring their case before the magistrates. Paul didn't just leave. He didn't just leave when the magistrates freed him, did he? He's like, he called them out. And he said, you guys have done this. You have beaten and imprisoned Roman citizens without trial. And therefore, it raised their anxiety level, of the magistrate's anxiety level, because Roman law, believe it or not, was absolute. If you were a magistrate and you broke those laws, and it could be proven that you had broken those laws, you were in a lot of trouble. And so this event allowed Paul and Silas to garner some level of protection for the church in Philippi. And I'm going to move on, because I want to get through a couple more cities before we're out of time here. Okay. So they left Philippi. They continue on in their journey. Anybody know where they went next? Thessalonica. Right. So they're in Thessalonica. We'll keep moving on. All right. So where did Paul begin preaching in Thessalonica? Synagogue, right? That was his tradition, right? So he goes into the synagogue. He begins preaching in the city of Thessalonica, in the city of Thessalonica, in the synagogue. He spends 3 weeks doing so. And, of course, as Paul had a custom going into the synagogue and preaching, the Jewish response, their custom was to rent a mob and to try to chase him out of the city. So, what was different with the encounter with the mob in Thessalonica? They attacked the household adjacent. They couldn't find Paul. So instead of trying to attack Paul directly, they went and they attacked the household of Jason. We have some wonderful things out of that that we're not going to be able to get to tonight. Or this morning. Thank you, Mr. Bree. Getting that started for the tonight thing. And then let's see. After Paul leaves, Thessalonica, where does he go next? Berea. What was unique about the Bereans? If you remember one thing about the Bereans, what is it? They were more noble-minded and they sought the scriptures. They looked at it. They figured it out. They wanted to see if what Paul was saying, if Paul and Silas were saying things that were actually true. They wanted to see if it matched up with the scripture. And so, of course, Paul and his companions, they leave Berea. What drove them out of Berea? Three letters. Mob. Pretty much every time. The mob chases them out because the Jews from Thessalonica had agitated the crowds, etc., etc. So, into what region does Paul travel from Berea? He goes from Berea into what region? That's a city. Athens is the city. In what region is it? Achaia. Right. So he goes into the region of Achaia. He's leaving the city, the area of Macedonia. He's into the region of Achaia. Paul goes into the city of Athens. What was it about the city of Athens that provoked Paul's spirit? Silly city full of idols. Anybody remember the approximate number of idols according to historical accounts? 30,000. 30,000 idols in a city that at the time, it's hard to say exactly, but in at the time between 60 and 100,000 people. Wow, that's a lot of idols, guys. A lot of idols. And we kind of made the point that, you know what, Americans have probably just as many or more idols, but they're just not as obvious. But Paul was obviously stirred to agitation and to speak because of these approximately 30,000 idols. Paul is invited to speak at what meeting place? Mars Hill, what else is it known as? The Areopagus, right. So Paul is invited to speak at Areopagus or Mars Hill. And what were the two primary philosophical teachings in Athens? Stoic and Epicurean philosophy. What is the basic teaching of Stoic philosophy? If you can sum it up in just a couple of sentences, what's the basic teaching of Stoic philosophy? By the way, I find this rather interesting. There is actually a modern movement for a return to the Stoic belief system. Detachment. That's a great way to put that. Detachment from what? Everything. Common sense. Who said common sense, Mike? I like that. It was really, that's a great way to put it. It's detachment. It's not allowing anything, emotionally speaking, to have an effect on you. Not love, not hate. You know, obviously not allowing hate to have influence over you is a really good thing. But love, hate, joy, all of those things that are connected with emotion, complete detachment from that. The other couple of things I want to make sure you remember from Stoic philosophy is that it taught that there was an impersonal force in the universe known as the Logos. Okay. In Stoic philosophy, everything is material. Everything is material. Even God. And of course, the universe, in their particular perspective, was created by fire and would be destroyed by fire and recreated by fire. So fire was essentially their creation force. Everett Ferguson actually sums it up very well. He says, there are two basic kinds of matter. This is what Stoic philosophy teaches. There are two basic kinds of matter, the grosser matter and the finer matter, called breath or spirit, pneuma, that is diffused throughout reality. Does that sound familiar? Anyway, this special form of matter holds everything together and is given various names: logos, reason, breath, pneuma, providence, pronoia. Zeus, or fire, the element most akin to reason, is responsible for this creation. Stoicism was pantheistic in that it found the divine reality in everything. Okay? So the Stoic approach, I guess Walden would be a good, on Walden Pond, Henry David Thoreau, a good example of Stoic approach. He lived 2 years in a cabin, thinking that he would find enlightenment. Instead, all he did was, worship nature, but that's a whole other thing. Okay, so Epicurean philosophy. What is the basic teaching of Epicurean philosophy? Yeah, basically the opposite direction of Stoicism. Hedonism. Push off. If it's painful, I don't want to do it. If it's pleasurable, that's where I'm going. Okay? And behind Epicurean philosophy, that basically the basic teaching of their scientific approach, if you will, and I'm using that term very loosely, is that the world and everything in it is the result of the random chance collision of atoms. That's what Epicurean philosophy started with. That's where its basis is. According to Lucretius, the living world formed spontaneously and developed into its present form by survival of the fittest. So, if you want an easy way to remember what Epicurean philosophy is like, remember evolution. What do they start with? Ease, right? Epicurean philosophy is very, very similar to what evolution is today. It is also worth noting that Epicurean theories were not based on any empirical evidence. None. But the theory itself demands it. This, to me, is probably one of the... It's evolution in a core. In and of itself, evolution should have evidence to base its theories on, but it doesn't. Okay? All right. And one final, I know we're over, but... And we have many other cities we could cover, but or many other events we could cover. But Paul's message in the Areopagus was different than most of his previous messages. In what way? How was his message in the Areopagus on Mars Hill different? Why did he? What did he do differently, and why? He started with their thought process. What did he not do, JD? Right. He didn't go into the, okay, Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, let's open up your scrolls and we're going to go talk about Abraham and David, and because they didn't care. He started with them where they were. That is the most important thing I think you can get out of that whole thing, out of that entire chapter where Paul preaches in the Areopagus and he's in the city of Athens. He deals with them where they are. He deals with Epicurean and Stoic philosophy, which was the driving teachings in that time and in that place, and that teaching affected that time in the world, time and place in the world. So he dealt with them where they were, and he did not worry. He didn't start with the Jews. So the message out of that, guys, is know what's going on. You can't just walk up to somebody and hand them a business card that says Acts 2:38 on it and walk away. You've got to make sure you connect with people and know what they believe and at least be able to reason through it with them so they can reason their way through it. Okay? That was a very fast review. I was going to ask you what you thought, what you got out of the second one. So if Benoit is not here next week, I would love to hear that from you. Okay? Thank you for your kind attention. You are dismissed.